Creative Male Aging, a radio and internet project in which we explore and challenge many of the conventions around aging and look particularly at new options for today's older men. I'm Tony Ryan. Welcome to the program.
And it's not a once-off event. You know, the retirement party and the handing over of the gold watch is one afternoon in a lifetime. It's not the rest of your life. It's a bit like a wedding. Whereas once you're in retirement, you could be in retirement for 25 or 30 years potentially. There's a lot greater opportunity there to continue to set goals, to continue to revise the plan and move forward.
The focus of today's program is on that very important life transition, which we know as retirement, a word that evokes many and varied emotions and reactions. For some of us, it's a time when we have to face leaving a successful and satisfying career. For others, it might be an unforeseen redundancy. And for others again, it could be a long-anticipated and exciting time in life when we're free from work constraints and can do just what we want. From the University of New South Wales in Sydney, psychologist Dr. Joanne Earle is passionate about making retirement a positive experience for all Australians. Her most recent research demonstrates the value of goal setting in retirement planning and the importance of exercising personal control in the transition to retirement. Recently, I spoke with Dr. Joanne Earle at the studios of the Community Radio Network in Sydney. What's involved in retirement planning?
It's a good question, and I think a lot of it depends on how you define retirement. For me, I think about retirement as just a different career phase. It's just a different phase in your career, and it could mean stepping back from work. It could mean moving into a new area of work. It could mean refocusing your energy so you've got more autonomy and flexibility in terms of your career. But when you're planning, I try to get people to plan across five different areas and think about the resources that they'll need. So I get them to think about finances and health, social, so that's leisure, cognitive, so that's about, you know, memory and keeping a keen mind, emotional, so it's about staying positive, and also motivational, about setting goals. And unfortunately, most of the stuff that people hear about is just about finances. And it's very, very short-sighted, because we know that finances and health are equal predictors of retirement adjustment. You can be the happiest person on earth with loads of money, but if you're too unwell to take that trip around the world that you'd been planning, or the trip around Australia in the caravan, or to do any of the things that you've been parking up for retirement, and you haven't got good health, then all of those things are very difficult to exercise. So I try to encourage a more holistic approach to retirement planning, and not just too much focus on finances alone. Finances are important, but so are a lot of other things.
Of course, the financial crisis has affected many people's retirement plans, many men's retirement plans.
Absolutely. And we've seen a lot of people staying on work for longer because of that reason, because their savings expectations haven't been met. We've also seen people leave the workforce, retire, and then go back to work. But a lot of the reasons that they'll go back are not just financial, but they might be bored, or it's just not meeting their expectations. And I think that the thing about the financial crisis is it brought to light the fact that although you complain, you know, you can never be 100% sure of what's coming. But if you're on top of your financial situation, you know where all your money is, you know how it's behaving, then you're more likely to be able to act quickly rather than sitting around and just waiting for the inevitable, you know, nest egg to disappear in front of you.
How do men cope with leaving the workforce? And I'm thinking particularly men and women, but men have very much traditionally defined themselves in terms of their work.
Now, this is a really interesting question, because we did some research a couple of years ago, and I had this idea that the male executive who's been working hard their whole life and maybe disconnected from their family and their community would find retirement difficult, because what we call work centrality is that work's more central to their life. you know, that their social networks are set up around the people that they work with, the type of work that they do. It suggests that they're working long hours and often they're not getting to connect with the community and maybe the way that their partners and their children do. We had a look at those people. We had a look at those overworked executives, the people who never seem to be at home. And we thought that they'd have more difficulty adjusting to retirement than their partners. Well, the good news was that they didn't. They were able to adjust just as readily as anyone who didn't find work so central to their life. So I think that there's some evidence there that just because you're working very hard doesn't mean to say that you're going to find you disconnected from the real world or the rest of the world when you leave work and you retire. But at the same time, we find that when men focus their planning efforts, it tends to be on finances. Women will focus on health and leisure, men on finance, and pretty much no one, male or female, is doing planning around careers or work. So that's not unexpected that they're not finding themselves transitioning in the way that they thought they might.
We'll hear more from Dr. Joanne Earle later in the program. Along with colleagues at the Australian National University in Canberra and at the University of Sydney, Dr. Tim Windsor from Flinders University in Adelaide is a member of a team looking at two important transitions in later life, retirement from the workforce and residential relocation. This research is based on a belief that a better understanding of the factors that influence the success of retirement and relocation transitions has the potential to inform government policy, as well as developing ways of assisting older adults in adapting successfully to those changes commonly experienced in later life. I spoke to Dr. Tim Windsor at Flinders University.
So transitions that happen in later life, we tend to think about as those fairly major life changes, and many of those things are what we might describe as being normative, things that most people go through, like retiring from work or, in the cases of many older women, the loss of a husband. Obviously, a lot of men lose their spouses as well, but simply because of the differences in longevity, it tends to be a transition that older women experience more frequently. But these are the sort of major life changes that happen, and we're interested in ways of helping people to negotiate those transitions in ways that can minimise the losses and maximise the potential gains that happen as a result of those changes. And part of that is through people recognising the opportunities that can arise through going through these sorts of transitions. And another part of it is people being able to manage their goals and expectations in ways that can help to make the most of opportunities and maybe take the emphasis off the things that they can no longer do as well as they used to or may no longer have the opportunity to do, and instead focus on making the most of those opportunities that remain available to them.
It is a big transition, though, as most of us men tend to define ourselves in terms of our work.
Yeah, that's very true. And I think this is the sort of the roles that people feel socially as part of their working lives, very important for men and for women as well, but perhaps more so for men, particularly those of older generations. And often that's where things like volunteering and adopting other roles where people are still remaining engaged in the community and still able to experience a sense of purpose can be really important in helping to negotiate that transition. Right across our lives, the way that we manage our behaviour and the things that we do on a day-to-day basis comes down to the goals that we have, our short-term and long-term goals about the things that we want to achieve and the way that we want to organise our lives and our activities. And a sense of purpose really is a broader framework that informs those goals. So for those of us that are working, many of us will have a strong sense of purpose around achieving work-related goals, but also goals around family and hobbies and social activities and other things. Because working life provides such a key aspect of purpose for many men, being able to find an appropriate alternative way of expressing that and an alternative framework for organising day-to-day goals is where purpose comes into play as part of that retirement transition.
In thinking about purpose, I'm also thinking about structure, and structure of one's day or one's life is pretty important.
Yeah, and again, I think it varies from person to person, but without doubt, work provides whether we want it to or not, it provides a very clear structure for many of us as we go about our day-to-day tasks. And so, again, when we contemplate life after work, finding other means of introducing that structure to our lives and providing a framework for setting and achieving goals can be very important. Research around the sense of purpose specifically is something that's relatively new, and it's an area that we're moving into with some of the work that we're doing without having conducted specific studies yet, although they're on the horizon. But the general research around sense of purpose shows that people with a higher sense of purpose tend to do better on various different measures of aging well, things like physical health and mental health. But I think some of the most compelling research in this area comes from research on volunteering, which has compared people who older adults who volunteer with older adults who don't volunteer. And that research is fairly consistent in showing that volunteers do better on a whole range of different outcomes, from physical health to mental health, and indeed they live longer relative to those who don't volunteer. So it's often assumed that the sense of purpose that is afforded by people adopting these volunteer roles could be one of the important things in helping them to maintain a sense of well-being in the post-retirement years.
On the Community Radio Network around Australia, you're listening to Creative Male Ageing, a series of 12 programs in which we challenge the stereotypes and explore new options for today's older men. Today we're looking at transitions in later life with Dr. Tim Windsor from Flinders University in Adelaide, and at some aspects of retirement planning with Dr. Joanne Earle from the University of New South Wales in Sydney.
The other thing that's important is mastery. Mastery is really just about being king of your own domain. It's about feeling that you can do things for yourself, that even if maybe you haven't come across something before, you will have a go at it. So let me give you an example. You might say someone has what we call self-efficacy, and self-efficacy is about, can I do it or not? Mastery is about, well, can I do a whole lot of things? So you'd be said to have high mastery if you felt, for example, that you could learn new things, or that even if you were dissatisfied with an outcome as a consumer, then you'd pursue it. So it's really about being master of your own domain and taking control of situations. So mastery is a good predictor of retirement adjustment. If you're starting to feel a bit helpless, then that's likely to be affecting your retirement adjustment. So mastery, taking control. Also, post-retirement planning. Everybody talks about the planning you should do in response to retirement, but that's too short a period. If you think about when most people plan for retirement, they probably start in their late 40s, early 50s. They might retire at about 60. There's about 10, 15 years that they've been planning, and it's not a once-off event. You know, the retirement party and the handing over of the gold watch is one afternoon in a lifetime. It's not the rest of your life. It's a bit like a wedding. Whereas once you're in retirement, you could be in retirement for 25 or 30 years potentially. There's a lot greater opportunity there to continue to set goals, to continue to revise the plan and move forward. So I encourage people to keep planning during retirement, not to consider just the pre-plot planning period. And in fact, what we find is that those people who continue to plan, continue to review their plans, think about setting goals, working towards those, they have a better, happier retirement. It works well for them. The other thing that can sometimes affect retirement adjustment is conditions of exit. A lot of people, and this is one of three reasons why people normally leave the workplace, and that's redundancy. you know, and it's the elephant in the room, but we should talk about it because it is a common occurrence, and it might be more common in the future if the Liberal government goes ahead with their plans of reducing their public service workforce. Now, the problem is that sometimes people can't reconcile the fact that their jobs have been made redundant and they feel that they themselves personally have been made redundant. And so those conditions of exit where mastery levels are low and people have made the decision for them can sometimes have a longer lasting effect. And people need to take control of that situation very early on. I've seen in my research, I read the comments that people make about why and how they left the workforce, and some people will just never get over the fact that their jobs have been made redundant. 20, 30 years later, they're still asking themselves the question, why me and what's wrong with me, rather than looking more objectively at the fact that they were probably one of many, that sometimes these decisions are never made in a perfect world, and that they may have just been in an industry that was retracting globally or at least nationally, and that was the space that they were in. So those people who can take control of that situation early on, have a look at their options and start thinking about other strengths that they have to leverage, are more likely to adjust better to retirement.
I think the car industry is a good example of that at the moment.
It is. It's a very good example. And we have seen examples down in Melbourne previously where car manufacturers have retracted their workforces. And some of the research in the car industries down there show that those people who adapt best have a look at where demand for staff is, rather than trying to recreate the jobs they had. Because the problem is, of course, often when one manufacturer retracts, so do many. And so trying to keep yourself in the same space that you've always worked in and maybe not retraining or thinking differently about careers is not necessarily the right recipe for success. It's not without its pain. I'm not trying to make it sound like it's easy. It's really not. There is a bit of pain associated with taking stock of where you are and maybe going backwards for a while to get new skills and to retrain in an area where you know that you're going to have long-term sustainability in terms of a career. So it's a case of having a look at not just where you've been and what you've done, but where the demand is for the future and what strengths you have that you can leverage to try to move yourself into that space. And I think that, you know, where you see recurrent situations of people not just losing one job but another, they start to believe that there's a pattern. But if they have a look at the state that they're in, I mean not the state, I mean geographical state that they're in, if they have a look at the number of people that are losing jobs in their own industries, in their own geographic area, then they can start to make sense of it. But it is very difficult, and you'll find that if people have been through one or two or three redundancies, and it's not unusual. I mean, I've seen people go through as many as four redundancies, but one of the things often is that they've gone from one dying manufacturer to another one who's just hanging on, and then another one who's just hanging on, and so the pattern goes. But if they have a look at the work that they've done over those jobs, there's probably a lot of similarity in the role. So, you know, some people will say, well, it's not easy to retrain for a job. It's not, but it's not easy to keep being made redundant either. So trying to think forward about where the opportunities might be is sometimes the quickest way to sort of pull the Band-Aid off, really.
In some ways, it's quite natural to think about rises in the retirement age, and we think about the context of when the old age pension was introduced as a part of a social safety net in years gone by, when life expectancy was much shorter. And so now we find ourselves in a situation where there's a much larger proportion of people reaching retirement age who are still in very good health and still capable of working for longer. So it's not surprising necessarily that governments are looking at raising the retirement age. What I would hope comes from this policy change is more of a recognition that people are still very capable as they move through their 60s and into their 70s and beyond in working environments, and that might actually have the effect of reducing some of the negative stereotypes around ageing that we have. I think the thing that we need to be careful about is recognising the very different retirement experience that's likely to be had by older men across different occupations. So, for example, where someone is working in a professional career, they may be very well placed to keep working at a very high level and in a way that is very engaging for them, whereas those in more manual occupations who might have the years of wear and tear on their bodies might have a much more difficult time in remaining in the workforce after the age of 70 or and beyond.
For those people, and particularly men in this instance, who do retire early, if they retire at 50, there can still be 40 years or so of life to look forward to.
Yeah, there certainly can. And I think that what's important is for people who do retire early, or for indeed those retiring at any age, to think about what life beyond retirement is going to hold for them before they're actually faced with the situation of sitting at home and not having a job to go to anymore and wondering what to do with their time. So I think while there's a lot of emphasis placed on issues around financial security into retirement and superannuation and how people are going to manage in terms of their financial resources, there's less emphasis placed on how people are actually going to manage the social and community aspects of their lives and their relationships as they move beyond their working life.
So how should men prepare for retirement?
Well, I think there's no one way that's going to work for everybody, but I think it could be helpful for men to think about what their current interests are, think about whether retaining a level of engagement in activity that flows on from their working life is going to be something that will be satisfying for them and where they feel they can continue to make a meaningful contribution, or indeed whether the things that sustain them and interest them are actually those that are very different to what they experience in their working life. And I think either of those pathways can lead to a successful retirement and aging well. But I think the important thing is just thinking ahead and planning. Many older adults choose to downsize or make changes in their living arrangements as they get older, and more are preferring the option of living in retirement communities, although it still represents a fairly small proportion of older adults, as most tend to remain in their own homes and most prefer that to do that. Modern retirement village providers are becoming more aware of the need to have an integrated sort of community where their residents aren't set apart from the rest of the community, but they're actually integrated within groups of people of all ages, but rather just have facilities that are more appropriate to them in terms of their specific needs for their stage of life. And our research suggests that most people who decide to take that option of moving into a retirement village are very much motivated by the desire to have a level of certainty about the long-term availability of care, should they need it into the future. Even though some of the more leisure-oriented aspects of retirement communities can still be attractive, I think very much the core motivating factor for many older adults who decide to take that option is knowing that there's going to be a level of support available to them should they need it in the future, and knowing that they won't be faced with difficult decisions and situations in terms of needing to involve family members in their care or other sources of support.
But of course, there's that whole question of childcare and grandparents looking after their grandchildren and the contribution to society that certainly makes.
It's an important point, and certainly grandparents make a major contribution in that area, and they're frequently relied upon by their adult children in the context of challenges to getting their kids into childcare and the expenses associated with that. So there's no doubt that grandparents are playing an important role there. We need to be mindful of making sure that we're not overburdening them, as there are varying levels at which grandparents are willing or able to contribute in that way. What excites me about the work that we're doing at the moment is the great potential that older adults have to make a really lasting and meaningful contribution socially and economically into the future. There is warranted concern about our changing age demographic and the aging of the baby boomers and the fact that we're going to have a lot of people moving into their 60s and 70s over the next couple of decades, and that will place more more stresses on the healthcare system, but it will also create opportunities in that many of these people maintain very good health and very high levels of social and community engagement. And we now have this extensive period that many older adults enjoy in the post-retirement years, where they maintain these good levels of health and functioning, and they actually have more discretionary time that enables them to do things that they enjoy, but also enables them to put things back into the community through volunteering and other aspects of social engagement. So the thing that excites me is looking at the possibilities for harnessing that great social resource that's likely to be a result of these demographic changes, and focusing on the potential for a real positive to come from the aging baby boomer cohort, as opposed to only focusing on the potential economic downsides.
Today in Creative Male Aging, we've been looking at some aspects of retirement planning with Dr. Joanne Earle, and at transitions in later life with Dr. Tim Windsor from Flinders University in Adelaide. The project consultant for the Creative Male Ageing Project is South Australian-based psychotherapist, author and educator Dr. John Ashfield. This Aspects of Ageing project was made possible with assistance from the Office for the Ageing, Department of Health, the Government of South Australia. From PBAFM in Adelaide, South Australia, I'm Tony Ryan. Till next time, go well.